Call the meeting to order. I guess we have a quorum. Maybe not. We'll wait for the minutes. We'll get right into the witnesses then. And I just want the witnesses to know that, you know, we're just common and ordinary folks, and you don't have to be nervous up here, even for some of you that might have a former teacher. So the first witness we have is Aaron Monroe from Bemidji. So, Aaron, where are you? Hello, Aaron. Come on down, and just for the tape, just sit down, identify yourself, say your name, and then you can start your testimony for me from Nickel. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Bongo. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Indian OIC, located in Bemidji, Minnesota. We operate a very unique training program in... We have with us today one of our successful students, Mr. Aaron Monroe, and he's here today to talk with you and share a little bit about his story. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Monroe.
Thank you. Hello. My name is Aaron Monroe. I'm 28 years old. I have lived in Bemidji for many years. I have a small family of my own now. My son's name is Zell. He's 4 years old, and his mother's Clarissa, who is 24. We live in a nice house, have nice neighbors. We lived in Tucson for a while in 2002. That's where my son was born. We had many struggles and issues in Tucson and came back to Minnesota. Most of my life has been a struggle to survive. I have been chosen by Northwest Indian OIC to come here today to talk about my trials and tribulations, and how the OIC program has helped me. As a child, I lived with alcoholism and violence and the welfare system. I have dropped out of school when I was in seventh grade. I look back and think, how could a kid that young not have parental support? I believe it is very important to be a good role model for my son. Northwest Indian OIC has helped me become a good role model. I have struggled with my education. I know the best way to get a good paying job is to get an education and to learn good problem solving skills. OIC has helped me to achieve both of those goals. My life up to 2006 was very much out of focus. Then I received a flyer saying there was an opportunity for me to get a certified as a nursing assistant. Clarissa and I both love working with the elderly, and we decided this was a good opportunity for the both of us. Where we were on welfare and had tried individual and group counseling, had worked in many minimum wage jobs. We just wanted to raise our child and get past our issues, but we were still having problems financially. Emotionally, as a couple, Northwest OIC has helped us achieve our goals. They provided us with an education and have been excellent and gave us excellent support. Besides paying for the CNA training, they helped us get our resumes written. They bought us our scrubs and shoes and provided us gas vouchers. They also provided us emotional support when we needed it. They helped us regain our trust and for each other, other providing counseling that gave us problem-solving skills. They helped us stay on task and be strong. They provided me with the study skills, test-taking skills, and encouraged me to keep... We always felt welcome and a part of the team at OIC. The environment was very diverse. Some of the teachers and many students were Native American. This really helped me to be comfortable returning to my education after so long. I am now working as a CNA at Havenwood Elderly Care Facility. Clarissa is working as a home health aide. we are on the right track. Northwest Indian OIC has helped me to become healthier emotionally and more financially secure. I have matured and I am now able to be the role model for my son that my son deserves.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Monroe. Members, this is one of the programs, I believe, that used to be out of the general fund that during the days of the cuts around here got put in the Workforce Development Fund, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Fondo, how many, I know there are a number of, OICs that were down here in the cities too, and now yours is up in north central part of the state.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. There are presently five operating OICs in the state of Minnesota. We combined and come together under the umbrella of the Minnesota OIC State Council, which is headed by Mr. Bill Means as the executive director. We're a very diverse group. There's an old cliche that says one size doesn't fit all, and that's very true. Being a rural program, we have numerous unique challenges that others do not. And I'll give you a couple of prime examples. In Bemidji, Minnesota, we are not privileged to have public transportation. To the extent that without a public transportation system, transportation is a huge barrier for our clients. And we serve a seven to nine county area in rural Minnesota. And so that's a huge challenge. I'll give you an example. What we try to do is we try to build in contingency plans around child care and around transportation to the extent that carpooling is very big. This past summer, when we were conducting our certified nurses assistant training, we had three young ladies from Deer River, Minnesota, approximately 70 miles away, located in Itasca County, who were participants. The only form of transportation they had was one of the ladies' husband's dump truck. And so they drove 70 miles every day, those three ladies, in a dump truck. And we have some pictures at the office of them. And but I have to commend them. We helped them with gas, and it darn near killed us, the price of diesel fuel. And a dump truck is not the most fuel-efficient vehicle in the world.
You should have had them hauling firewood on the
carriage. Yes. If we could have picked up a load of gravel both ways, we might have been able to partially pay for it. So, but aside from that, when we initially looked at the healthcare industry, I like to tell people in rural Minnesota, we are economically and geographically challenged. I spoke to the geographic issue. Unfortunately, one of the other problems that we face in rural Minnesota is we do not have access to additional outside resources, i.e. foundations and corporations. We have one major foundation that serves rural Minnesota, and that would be the Blandin Foundation. Outside of that, we are limited, extremely limited. Many of the foundations and corporations in the seven-county metro area have just that as their service area, the seven-county metro area and wherever they have plant communities. But unfortunately, the last time I checked, we don't have any 3M or General Mills plants in northern Minnesota, and so we're locked out of seeking and getting additional outside resources. Subsequently, it's a real challenge for us. And I've always said, Mr. Chairman, that I believe that nonprofit managers are the best businessmen and women in the world. I say that because if you work for a for-profit, you generally are selling some sort of tangible product, good or service. In the nonprofit community, we are continuously challenged to do more with less to make do with what we have. And aside from that, what we're really selling to many of the funders are hopes and dreams of a better tomorrow. So from that aspect, being a part of the Minnesota OIC family, each of the OICs have their own unique needs because we serve entirely separate and different communities.
Very well put, Mr. Monroe.
Thank you.
Representative Slocum.
Well, I came in And I looked at the agenda today, and I said, Erin Monroe. I know an Erin Monroe. I was Erin's teacher probably just before he dropped out. There weren't enough alternatives in the system to hang on to a kid like Erin. He was, and I'm thinking probably still is, very smart, but pretty unhappy, pretty angry kid. I'm so glad he found this program, and I am delighted that he's doing as well as he is. It's really nice to see him. And I just wanted to let the committee know, this is one of my former kids. I wish I could have done more for him. I wish also that we would have had some social work assistance at school that was native, because I think that would have made a huge difference, too. Anyway, I'm done.
Thank you, Representative Sloan. I suppose I shouldn't ask Erin and put him on the spot what kind of teacher you were.
I'm sure he's smart. I'm sure she taught him enough to understand that an excellent teacher would be doing
the right answer. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to compliment the program. I'm putting together this return on investment report, and the way that you've calculated these numbers make it really easy for us to say, hey, look at how valuable this program is. So thank you for putting it together in this way. I'll be sharing this with other groups that come see me and saying this is the information we need to make good decisions. But I also want to comment on the issue of transit. When we start talking about transit later on the floor, I want people to remember the story about the dump truck, and that transit is not a metro issue, and that transit is an economic development issue, and it's about getting people from where they live to work is one of the key factors.
And Mr. Bonda, would this be a typical year for you?
Yes, sir. Correct. And you know, we try to make sure that there are certain economic indicators that we can utilize to determine our progress. We have no problem whatsoever with accountability. That's never been an issue. But by the same token, I guess I look at it this way. There are times when I get extremely frustrated when I see various state agencies, and sometimes I feel like we're held to a higher standard or there's a double standard. In the nonprofit community, we are driven to produce and to show people results. But we deal with unique circumstances and factors, both economic, geographic, and human factors that sometimes are difficult to measure. And I've always looked at it from the perspective that one way or another, society is going to educate our children, and we're going to have to pay for it. But I fear that if we wait and we don't educate our children and pay for them their education in the school systems now, I fear that the cost for educating them if they receive their education on the streets is going to be more than we can bear, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and above all else, financially. It's no secret. The last time I checked, it was running around $52,000 a year to incarcerate one person for 1 year. And it's too bad that we couldn't spend those type of resources on educating our young people as opposed to incarcerating them.
Representative Dantner.
Mr. Chairman, does the Northwest IOIC, do you have any relations with higher education like Bemidji State University or Itasca?
No. Yes, sir, we do. As a matter of fact, this is one of the beauties of the project because when I first went back to, and I'm originally from the Walker area, and I spent 22 years in the Twin Cities. I've always been a country boy at heart, but I didn't move to the metro area because I love the metro area. I came down here because there was no jobs and no opportunity when I graduated from college at Bemidji State University many years ago, back in the early 80s. But one of the beauties of this particular project is when I first came back to what I consider home, being northern Minnesota, like many communities nationally, there was a shortage of healthcare workers in the community. Bemidji is in the process of being transformed into a regional economic, social, healthcare, and educational hub. And as I indicated, there was a huge shortage of entry-level healthcare workers in the Bemidji community. Many of the surrounding smaller community hospitals had closed. And so when looking at that, and coupling it with the fact that we're surrounded by the state's three largest Indian reservations, those being the Red Lake Reservation, the Leech Lake Reservation, and the White Earth Reservation, where employment was an issue, or unemployment. It occurred to me that by bringing the two problems together equaled the solution. And so that's what we did. We approached the hospital, North Country Regional Hospital, and we also approached Northwest Technical College at Bemidji. Unlike our sister organizations here in the Twin Cities, the Northwest Indian OIC is not an accredited institution. We are more of a social and economic service organization. And so rather than reinvent the wheel and go through the accreditation process to become a private nonprofit vocational school, it made a lot more sense to partner with the institutions in the community. And that was one of the real beauties of this project is, through the project, we were able to develop a relationship that benefited not only the hospital and the healthcare community, but also the Northwest Technical College at Bemidji. And here's what we did. Prior to this program, the process for becoming a CNA at Northwest Technical College at Bemidji was you attended 120 hours of training, most of which was lab work. However, if you missed so much as 1 hour of that training, you were washed out because in order to be licensed, you have to have the 120 hours of training minimum. So you'd be washed out and you'd have to go back and start at the very beginning all over again. It was a disincentive. Working with the administration at the vocational school, we were able to develop entry points and exit points. So if for whatever reason someone had to drop out, they wanted to come back after their problems or issues were resolved, they could come back, pick up where they left off, complete, and then move on. And the beauty of that is it translated into a success for not only the students, the healthcare industry in our community, but also the Northwest Technical College at Bemidji, because they are now turning out and graduating more Native students than they ever have before. And the additional benefit from my perspective is it was helping to overcome barriers as well that many Native students and learners had with going into a traditional educational setting. So it has been a huge benefit and a huge boost in our community, to the extent that now other institutions are starting to look at and approach us about developing additional partnerships. One such, I'll give you an example, is, and I was pretty impressed, the day after Christmas, 9 o'clock in the morning, I was sitting in my office, and the president of Bemidji State University knocked on my door. It was John Criscar. And we sat down and we started talking about expanding healthcare occupations at the college, to the extent that, and I shared some data with you. Through our certified nursing assistant program in the last year, we trained 90 people. We had zero dropouts. Not one person dropped out. 68 were placed into jobs in the community. So that meant that there were 22 people that did not go into the healthcare industry. But that's a misleading fact, because what we did is we took our top 10 students, and they now are continuing on at the Northwest Technical College in an LPN program. So really, when you look at the information that I provided you, out of 90 students, all but 12 have bettered themselves in the form of employment or additional higher education.
Mr. Bondo, we pressed for time, and I'm not one to tell anybody to shorten up their answers, but as the rest of the committee will tell you. But we do have a number of people from Sartell and Isanti and Aiken also to get, and we hope to get to them. But I'm glad to hear that you're collaborating like that with our higher education institutions. And Representative Gunther, Representative Demers, do you have another?
I'm a Bemidji State graduate too, so I early 70s. So.
And Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned transportation. Is that a big lack of transportation? Is Bemidji got a countywide transportation, a regional-wide transportation service there?
To our knowledge, no. There is local bus service in the Bemidji community. And basically, it's somewhat like a taxi system. If you need the bus, you can call it, and based on their availability and other runs, they will be there to pick you up, generally within 90 minutes. but it's just within the city limits of Bemidji.
Mr. Gunther, being from Minnesota, I think you know that it's a little different situation out there for us.
We have transportation, Mr. Chairman, and one of the things wrong with the governor's proposal for public transportation is Greater Minnesota gets 2%, the Metro gets 38% of the in-depth transfer money. Our goal was just to get 5% for all the Greater Minnesota. We have the miles and everything else. If we had 5, maybe we could start a countywide transportation service there. And accommodate these people, and they would have jobs, and they would be able to get the goods and services they needed. And
it's a difficult situation. The dump truck story is a great story. I can picture it. We do have CAP agency in St. Louis County. Our CAP agency that runs, you probably know that, Mr. Bond, of the AEOA up there, a number of buses to try to help low-income people get to work, but it's hit and miss, too. Any other questions? We really appreciate your testimony, and you keep up the good work, and I'm glad to see, maybe someday you'll be a doctor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Cindy Whitcomb from Freeborn, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, Cindy, and one of my old Virginia schoolmates coming down, although he was much older than me. younger.
He looked awfully younger.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Committee, thank you for having us. My name is Daniel Swam, and I am the chair of the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Network, which is a consortium of the 7 displaced homemaker programs in Minnesota. And with me today is Cindy Whitcomb from Freeborn, Minnesota, who used displaced homemaker program services out of the Mankato program.
Welcome, Ms. Whitcomb.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for listening to me. Why the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program is needed. In today's world, women are experiencing many transitions in their life. Examples would be the death of their spouse, divorce, or loss of job. When we experience loss or transition in our lives, it can be traumatic, and we wonder how we can survive and accept the changes in our lives. The Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program is there to guide and support us through the changes in our lives by showing us what type of person we are through personal growth, giving us the confidence and courage to begin a new chapter in our lives. How the Minnesota Displaced Program helped me. 2 years before I attended the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program in Mankato, I was traveling down a dark tunnel and not seeing the light at the end of it. You see, tragedy had struck my family with the unexpected death of my husband. I had lost my identity as wife and began to wonder who I was and how I was going to survive financially, as we had just bought our dream house 5 months before his death after saving for 23 years, and my youngest child was starting college. Then I learned my hours as an elementary media associate, a position that I held for 12 years, was going to be cut by 1.5 hours. At this point, I knew that I needed some direction to begin a new life and career. After some nudging from a friend, I attended the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program in Mankato, where I received help in my personal growth, confidence, and courage. I will never forget the very first workshop where the facilitator said, "There has to be an ending before there can be a beginning." The light bulb went on for me because it made me realize that in order for me to have a new beginning, I had to have an ending. In the 10-week personal growth program and career development workshop series, I learned about my work values, took the strong interest inventory, and the career beliefs inventory. And I saw the connection between my assessments and interests and personality. The $165 I received for mileage reimbursement from the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program made it possible for me to attend the workshop because I could not afford the extra gas that it took to travel to Mankato from my home in Freeborn. With the direction I received from the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program in Mankato, I have just completed my first year in a full-time job as a customer service representative in a bank where I have the type of job that meets my vocational and my financial goals. Because of the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program, I have reached the end of the tunnel. I've reached that light at the end of the tunnel.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions Ms. Whitcomb at this time. Thank you both for coming down and speaking to us. This program, I believe, was at one time funded out of the general fund, and now it is funded, Mr. Sloan, by marriage and divorce surcharges?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The Minnesota Displaced Homemaker programs are funded at this time through a special revenue fund that is taken from the marriage filing fees and divorce filing fees. However, this program has been on a funding decline since the Ventura administration, and at one time we received funding from the Workforce Development Fund, the General Fund, and also some TANF dollars. And we served, at that time there were 12 programs throughout the state. There are now 7, and those 7 programs are in Virginia, Duluth, St. Cloud, Brainerd, St. Paul, Rochester, and of course Mankato.
And have the numbers declined correspondingly?
The number of clients served has also declined precipitously, although we strive, as the gentleman testifying before me said, as most of the programs that provide these services are housed in nonprofit agencies, CAP organizations, or at community colleges, and we have learned over the past 4 to 6 years how to really be financial magicians and to squeeze the most service that we can out of the limited dollars that we have been allocated.
Hey, thank you. No further questions then. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, again, thank the testifier here for coming down. I appreciate Ms. Whitcomb talking about the Displaced Homemaker Program. I just wanted to make a comment. I know that I used to serve on the Advisory Council of the Statewide Displaced Homemakers, so I fully do understand what the situation is. I recently had a person in my area who was trying to contact the Rochester Displaced Homemakers and received a recorded message, and I think that that's one of the drawbacks of the funding cuts, is that now that person, she can get some additional help from them, but the initial contact was a recorded message, and I think that that's really unfortunate, because so many times people are reaching out, they're struggling, they're apprehensive, they're really not sure, you know, about going through that process, and then if the first message is a recorded one, they don't actually have that person-to-person contact. That's just very unfortunate, and so I appreciate your testimony today.
Representative Poppy, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, you speak to a very real problem with all of the programs, in that because the main purpose of our program is to provide direct client services, where we have had to squeeze those dollars everywhere we can. I don't think that any of the programs have somebody answering the phone. I think that that is pretty much standard. And if you consider the situations that so many of our clients come from, as described by Ms. Whitcomb, simply to have something as what seemingly insignificant as to follow a phone tree or receive a recorded message can oftentimes serve as a barrier to those people who are desperately in need of services receiving services. And thank you for your concern.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for you or for our fiscal analyst. Do we have jurisdiction in this committee over those fees that fund this program? Or how will we take action to help them?
My understanding is we will have jurisdiction, but there's a question yet whether if we monkey with a fee, if we have to go through the tax committee. I don't know if Mr. Berg has found that out yet, so... But that's okay. I won't mind taking a bill through the tax committee. I'm on a tax committee. So.
Well, would we have to go through Paymar's committee, because that's where the court fees are?
Mr. Berg, do you want to answer
that question? Mr. Chairman, two separate questions. One, I think the issue of whether simply a fee change will take a bill to the tax committee is going to be, I think the House rules, the budget resolution will make it so that that is not the case. I think that's the current thinking, but that's not out yet. And I think, Representative Hartman, you raised the exact issue, which is if we monkey with the marriage and divorce filing fee, I think the Judiciary Committee or the Representative Paymar's Committee would be interested in that.
Okay, thanks.
That could be something we could work out. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it is a great program, and I just really thank you for coming. And really, we can thank Chair Gunther for getting this through, because that's how we got the funding back again. The bill went through last year to get that refunded, and I know there's some efforts this year to try to put it into the general fund so we don't have to jump through all these hoops. But I'm thankful that we have it. So,
Representative Gunther, maybe you should have thought about the marriage fee being higher than the divorce fee, but you know, like that. These people think, well, huh?
A few of them than the other.
Well, I think, isn't it $10 if you go to a counseling before you you get your marriage license, $20 if you don't go to counseling, and then $60 or $70 if you get divorced. So I just,
I think
you should have.
But anyway, the thing that I remember doing is when we took the money out of dislocated workers' fees, things in the state of Minnesota as far as layoffs and stuff like that were pretty good shape. Then we went through the crisis of 2003, and we didn't have enough money to get people retrained. Today, I think that trend is changing, so that might be a potential pot of money to look at.
Thank you. Well,
we used to have a surplus in it that the governors traditionally took and stole and put in the general fund.
We will appreciate your support when we get to that point. Thank you both for coming down again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Mr. Westerberg from Isanti, why don't you come on down? Appreciate your coming to the committee today. Welcome, and just state your name, and I see you got a partner here. So,
yeah.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for taking this testimony today, and it looked like there was kind of a theme developing, so I thought I would join Mr. Westerberg and give him a little moral support. My name is Todd Kufall. I'm the Legislative Director for the Laborers District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota, and I am kind of sitting in today for Mike Warner, our Apprenticeship Director, who was actually up on the Iron Range participating in a job fair for members of the American Indian community. So I'll do the best I can to answer questions specific to our apprenticeship program.
Welcome, Todd, and we'll see what Mr. Westerberg has to say, too. Welcome, Brad.
My name is Brad Westerberg. I'm 25. I live in Isani, Minnesota. And I'm in my first year of a 4,000-hour apprenticeship program as a skilled construction craft laborer. And there's also 288 hours of required classroom training. And this winter I've been going to the training center in Lino Lakes, Minnesota. So far I've done 4 classes in the last month, and I've done general construction, safety week, insulated concrete forms, and scaffold erecting. And I have 4 more classes coming up in February, and then I'll be done with the required classroom training. But I'm going to continue going to the training center to get more training. I enjoy going there and just learning, and I feel that the more classes I go to and the more, more experience I'll have, and it'll just give me more opportunities in the construction industry. Safety is a big part of all the classes that I've attended up there so far, and I've learned a lot about how to work more safely and just be a safer worker when I go back to work. Before I entered the apprenticeship program, I worked as a cook and a machinist, and neither of these jobs paid very well, and the benefits weren't very good. And as far as health care for myself and my daughter, and there was no retirement plan either. And I feel it's important for myself and my daughter to have good health insurance, and being an apprentice in the laborers union allows me to provide this insurance for her, and also a pension for myself when I retire. And my life has improved a great deal since getting in the apprenticeship program. I'm more financially stable and recently purchased a home, and I feel the training will allow me more advancement opportunities in the future. And I think that the apprenticeship program is very important because it teaches people how to work more safely, and a lot of the construction work can be dangerous, and if all the workers have been trained properly and go to the classes, I think there would be a lot less injuries and stuff. The laborers have a commitment to lifelong learning and training, and there's 11,000 members, and we all contribute up to 31 cents an hour for every hour that we work to help support the training center, and we can all have access to the training center. Even if after we complete the training, we can go there and get more training. And that's my experience so far, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've been given through the apprenticeship program, and I just want to thank you for allowing me to be here and tell my story.
Thank you very much, Mr. Westberg. If there's no questions, I'm just for Mr. Pufel, and then I'll get to you, Representative Mahoney. And incidentally, members, Todd is he replaced Representative Anzelt in the Laborers Union, is there? So we're glad to have you here today. How does this program meld in, as far as the union's apprenticeship program versus any monies that Mr. Westerberg may have gotten for training from through the workforce development monies or other dollars?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, as I understand it, again, I'm not focused on this issue. I understand there were some issues previously about, you know, how the apprenticeship programs were funded. A couple of years ago, I believe, there was a change whereby the apprentices themselves would actually pay for the funding of the apprenticeship programs in the state of Minnesota, and I believe that changed last session or the session prior to that. So the actual costs associated to the state with regards to overseeing these programs were at one point in time responsibility of the actual apprentices entering the program at their depreciated wage, and I believe that has been rectified. However, the actual facility and the training that Brad spoke about, and the basically unlimited training in the case of the laborers, is funded through 31 cents in the metro area, I believe 21 cents in all the other areas per hour off of their wages.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Gothard? Were you going to comment? Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Actually, you asked the question that I was going to ask about funding.
Okay, and then just before you leave, Mr. Westerberg, are you working then too? Is again your training for journeyman?
I'm not working right now. I'm laid off, but...
But you were while you were?
Yeah, and I'll be going back to work shortly.
Hey, Todd, let's keep them guys off the bench, huh?
They worked them up through December, so it does get cold in Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you both very much for your testimony. Megan Mosier from Aiken. Megan? Welcome to the committee, and whoever else we've got coming down, you might as well introduce yourself to.
My name is Carrie Paulson, and I'm an appointment counselor with the Northeast Minnesota Office of Job Training, and I'm here to proudly introduce Ms. Megan Roger.
Welcome.
Hello.
Megan. Sure, just go ahead. Just state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Megan Mosier. I'm 17 years old. I'm a senior at Aiken High School this year. My mother learned of the youth employment program back in 2004. She had me enrolled. She had, due to her low income, is why I was able to qualify for the program. She wanted me to earn my own money so I could provide stuff for myself that she couldn't provide for me. Neither one of us knew the impact that the youth employment program would have on my life. My first work experience was at the Farm Service Agency. I was placed there to learn clerical skills. At the time, I wasn't involved in any extracurricular activities, so I decided to go through the school year and work at the Aiken Workforce Center. At the Workforce Center, I assisted people who are looking for employment or who are in public assistance. I learned good customer service, and I learned to respect people no matter their situation or financial status. Personally, this was an extremely tough year. I was harassed every day at school, and in December 2005, I was caught with alcohol and the police were involved with that situation. At this point, I realized that I needed to change my life and change the way the choices that I was making. I continued to work at the Workforce Center and talked to my employment counselor almost daily. One of my first changes was getting involved in high school sports. The following summer, I was still working at the Workforce Center and continued to build on the skills that I was learning. I was also given more responsibilities, such as resume creating and updating job boards. In my junior year, I had the opportunity to participate in poverty study circles held by the Aiken Area Homeless Coalition. These studies focused on the effects of poverty in our communities. I realized the work that I did at the Workforce Center had a direct impact on people's lives. I also realized that by being involved in the community, it makes a difference. After that, I became involved with two organizations, the Advocates Against Domestic Abuse and Circles of Support through Lakes and Pines Community Action Council. I provided child care for both organizations and for support groups. I also acquired a job working at a local convenience store in town. I needed to get extra money at the time because my mother was on welfare and I needed to pay for our household bills. Things in school were going well. My grades made an extreme change and I was getting good grades instead of failing. The harassment at school had stopped. In January of 2006, I was in the hospital for kidney problems. This was 1 week before my mother gave birth to her second child. This put a great stress on our budget. My determination to succeed paid off when I was selected as the 2006 Outstanding Female Youth Participant for the Northeast Minnesota Office Job Training. Without the Youth Employment Program, I would never have been involved in my community as much as I have now. I have gained confidence to accept new challenges and look forward to the future. Yesterday, my employment counselor and I traveled to St. Cloud, where I toured St. Cloud State University, where I plan on attending for radiologic technology. If I hadn't been a part of the youth employment program, I would not have been in high school. Most likely, would have dropped out. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell my story. I hope that other students will have the opportunity that I had to create it, make a difference.
Well, thank you very much, Megan, for being here, and I just want to tell you how proud I am of what you've done, and I want the members to think about something, because the next three or four people that we have coming down, this program is going to sunset on June 30th of this year, and I think it's a very worthwhile program to keep, and you've just heard just one of the reasons why. So thank you for being here. Any other questions of Megan? Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Did Willie and Paige Moose make it here? Yes, they did. Welcome to St. Paul, and come on down. Appreciate your testimony. And Paige is probably on the same program, too, so welcome. Just identify yourself.
I'm Sally Brennan.
So why don't you grab a seat over there too? They've got an extra chair for you. Welcome to the committee, Willie or Paige, whichever one wants to start. Just go ahead and identify yourself for the tape. Oh, just 1 second though, Senator Senjan. How are you? Look at members. We have a senator in our. We just want to welcome you
in the room.
Would you like to sit in and see how things really get done? Okay, go ahead.
Well, my name is Paige Moose. I'm 16 years old. I went to Camp Challenge last summer. I'm not saying it changed my life, but it did make a big difference for me. I learned more than my 5-minute cheer can describe. I learned job skills, The whole programming is focused on teaching us important job skills for our future life, to do researching, and we had to follow a dress code for expectations. We all had to wear the same shirts. These are our shirts, and they have some on the back, and we had to wear them tucked in. It's part of the job code. We learned the importance of being on time. We also learned to work as a team in setting goals, developing a plan, researching, and implementing our project. We had to get along with each other no matter what our differences or race or color was. We all had our similarities. The challenge course was designed to really challenge us personally and physically as a team. We had to learn to overcome our fears on the ropes course and how to keep each other safe and be by the lake. We cheered each other on, and each of us accomplished far more than we originally believed we could. We learned that even if we made mistakes, all was not lost. We could still go on having hope and be positive for the rest of our day. We were expected to treat each other respectfully, no swearing or bullying, and that was really hard for some people.
I know that thing. Personal testimony to that, nature.
All of these things were considered the most important skills that employers in our area look for in the people they hire. All of us are now more employable because of our experience at Camp Challenge. For me, it was also a chance to interact with kids my own age, because that was something that was really hard for me to do, because I would hang out with younger kids instead of kids my age. But now it forced me to kind of grow up and be responsible for myself and for my team. One thing in particular that I'd like to address was that I learned that I need to stick to what I commit to. During the first week, I wanted to quit the Camp Challenge program. I didn't like getting up early or having to go to this job every day, but the counselors talked to me and they coached me through it, and they said, you know, you don't want to give up. You know you kind of enjoy this program as well as all the other kids. They encouraged me to not give up. I hope that Camp Challenge will keep getting the funding that is needed so more kids can have a positive experience that I had.
Thank you very much. Why don't you go ahead, Willie?
My name is Wilhelmina Moose. I'm Paige's mom, and I'm a single mom, and I face the same challenges as all the other single moms face, with the exception that I adopted Paige as a waiting child when she was 13 years old. So I didn't just get a child that I nurtured and made mistakes with. I got a child that the system made a lot of mistakes with. My focus is to have her be a positive person, to be a successful person, and getting her caught up with her peers, getting her caught up with her age group. Did not leave me the time to give her the skills and to teach her the skills to get a job, to know what was important in a job. And this program really, really helped her learn that I wasn't just blowing hot air when I was telling her things. She learned a lot of really good core employment values. And I watched her go from the kid who said, I'm not going today, to the kid who at the end of the program was really one of the leaders. I appreciated what the staff did, how much time they spent with them, how much they invested in the kids, how skilled these staff were. I worked with that youth risk for 14 years. Nothing prepared me for Paige. But these staff were wonderful. And I appreciate everything that they did. I would like to see this continue so that there's more kids who are able to go to be employable, to learn the values that she learned that I wasn't able to teach her at home. There's like 100 kids in this program, and it's 5 weeks, and I can't say enough good stuff about it.
Thank you, Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I would like to give a little personal testimony to the Youth Challenge Program and Stearns Benton Employment Training Council, which I had the privilege of serving on their board for 7 years and chaired it for a couple. I've watched these youth go into these programs, and for the dollars that we put in, we have really reaped the benefit of having people mature and come back as better students and interested in their community. There's a complete metamorphosis, a change in these young people, and I'm very appreciative of it, and I think funding should continue.
I sometimes joke about how hard it is to raise Paige, but really she is my pride and joy.
Ms. Brendan?
Brendan.
How much would it typically cost for a person like Paige to go to that program?
We can serve Paige for about $1,500. And let me just tell you, we have a 96% completion rate. The kids are expected to comply with employer expectations of 95% attendance, punctuality, job completion. And we also have, in about 21 days, almost an average of 1 grade gain in reading. $1,500, plus the joy of having young ladies like Paige around.
And of the $1,500, what's the mix, state, federal,
This is 100% MYP state funding. If we don't have MYP, it doesn't happen.
Thank you. Members? Representative Coffey, and then Tony, and then Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you asked a few of the questions, but I'm also, Paige, is this something that you could do every summer if you chose to?
Yes, I really like to. It's a really enjoyable program. It teaches you skills, and even if you go back again and you think you know everything, you really don't, you learn more. So I'd really enjoy to come back next summer.
And could I just ask what kind of job you actually did?
We did researching for jobs, and I looked up future career jobs. That's what we did for researching. And I picked veterinarian or doctor, and I kind of looked more into those and see how much college degrees it takes and stuff like that.
Thank you. And I just have
might I just explain, this is a program where we choose a community service project for the whole camp. And last year we did hunger. We have 8 teams of 8 kids, and they each design a community project, a project around hunger. That is their job. And teaching them to design and implement community service projects. Kits for the homeless. Breakfast in a bag for older people. Amazing project. So her job was to design her own learning.
Thank you. And one more question, Mr. Chair. And as far as your future goals, then, going on to college, it sounds like that's what one of the things that you're planning for. Does the project allow for some transportation and information about colleges?
Paige, go ahead.
Yeah, we had to get permission from Sally to leave the campus grounds of St. Cloud State for safety reasons, to make sure that, you know, we're safer and stuff. So yeah, there would be transportation if we had to go somewhere. For example, one of the projects our group did this year was we made magnets, and it said something along this line: if you're hungry, please feed the kids, or something. To one child, you might be everything, but to the world, you're something. And we had our motto on it, and United Way is a program that helps the homeless and hungry, and we put their logo on it, and so we gave out magnets for our service project.
Very good. Thank you.
Very good. Now, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I was wondering how many youth are served by this in a typical summer or year?
Well, that's one of the problems. There's no typical year. We have as many as 64. Every 2 years, we don't know if we have a program. So 1 year, we ended up having to do a 9-day program for 32 kids because we didn't know if we had any money. Every biennium, we go through this. 64 is the most we've ever had. Our money can fluctuate from $400,000 one year to $140,000 the next. Makes it very hard to plan.
And you improve on bullying and punctuality. Do you have a camp for... Never mind.
Take you back camp for chairs or what?
Representative Briner. You know, I'm keeping a score. I just want you to know that. Okay,
Mr. Chair. Ms. Moose, I wanted to compliment you as a mom on your compassion and courage in adopting an older child. I think that's just a brave act on your part. And Paige, I wanted to compliment you, speaking of courage. I've done a ropes course before, and I know it takes courage, and so good for you.
Thank you. She worked on that ropes course all summer long and finally made it.
Yep. The Jacob's ladder was the hardest for me. I'm deadly afraid of heights. I just can't do anything with even this high up. I'll feel like I'm falling off a mountain or whatever. And so I finally, second day, they're like, okay, Paige, you ready to try this? I'm like, yep. And I tried it, and I made it to the top with my friend Becky. She encouraged me and helped me. It's pretty fun.
Okay. No further questions. Thank all of you for coming.
Thank you.
And congratulations to you, Paige, and good luck. Next, Francisco Walden from St. Paul in the Youth Employment Service. Welcome, Francisca.
Go ahead. Committee members, my name is Terry Zern. I'm with Ramsey County Workforce Solutions, and we receive Minnesota Youth Program dollars to provide youth lead services to Ramsey County youth. And as you're aware, the Minnesota Youth Program serves youth 14 to 21 years of age in all 87 counties. And in the year of 2001, Minnesota Youth Program statewide received $6 million out of the general fund, and in 2005 it was not funded any longer from the governor's budget, but it was put back in through the legislature at $3 million out of the Workforce Development Fund. And I'm here today to introduce Francesca Walden.
Welcome, Francesca.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ruth Cavina and members of the committee. My name is Francesca Walden. I'm 20 years old and I'm from St. Paul. I'm here to talk about how the Minnesota Youth Program has impacted my life. I'll start by telling you a little bit about myself. I was 18 and working at Target when I found out I was pregnant. In the back of my mind, I knew I would not be able to support myself and my child making only $7 an hour. After my daughter was born, I left Target and bills started piling up. I knew I needed a change. I wanted to get into nursing and become a nursing assistant, but financial aid would not pay for such a short course. A friend of mine suggested that I contact the Minnesota Youth Program, and maybe they could help. So I contacted the Workforce Solutions Youth Program and became enrolled quickly into the program. I feel I have gained the necessary tools that I need to become competitively employable in the workforce. Some of the skills they helped me with there included learning work readiness training, soft skills training, like customer service, interviewing skills, and creating an effective resume. Many times I was desperately in need, they provided me with supportive services such as food cards, bus cards, and uniforms. I would also like to mention that I have a good relationship with my Workforce Solutions counselor. She has helped me with getting my driver's license, assisting me with job search activities, and actually taking me to interviews. I also feel because of the Minnesota Youth Program, I have become more civically involved. I participated in a youth rally here at the Capitol, and I also participated in a candidate forum with local candidates in this past November's election. All things, I wouldn't know where I would be without the program. Throughout all this, I still was very interested in getting the CNA training, so my counselor helped me get into the Red Cross training program. Without the program, I would have been unable to have the financial assistance to do the nurse assistant program. The youth program has definitely helped my life change for the better. Right now, I am working full-time as a registered nursing assistant, making a decent wage. I just started my spring semester at St. Paul College, pursuing a practical nursing degree, and I do plan on going on to being a RN. If it wasn't for the extra help from the program, I don't know how I would be where I am now. I hope that you guys continue to support the program, because I do believe that many other youth could benefit in the same ways that I have, if not, you know, in other ways too. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Francesca, for your testimony, and congratulations to you on your advancements. And Mr. Zurn, what would a typical cost be for someone like Francesca for helping her through the system and the training and everything?
Very similar cost to the program that you had just heard about, anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000.
And is yours a mixture of any different funds or all state dollars?
It's also a mixture of the Workforce Investment Act dollars. It was a combination of both those, MYP and WIA dollars.
Any other questions? Representative
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to congratulate you. I think you've set for yourself some reasonable and achievable goals, and I think that that is also just something that you have done. Certainly it's great to have the dollars. It's great to have the kind of program that's available to you, but you took advantage of it, and you're doing a good job. And so I think that that's just a remarkable thing, and I just wanted to commend you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you both for coming down to the committee. And our final testimony today is from Samantha Brady from Champlin. Samantha, and I'm sure are you coming down with Ms. Samarja? Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee. We're glad to have you. And Jane, are you going to start off? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jane Samarja. I'm executive director of HIRED, a nonprofit that operates employment and training programs in four metropolitan counties here. Most of our funding does come through the government. And I'm very happy to introduce to you Samantha Brady, who is something of a celebrity among our participants. She's done wonderful things with her life.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Samantha Brady. This is my picture on the front page of the Star Tribune from December 16th of this year at my current job. As I said, my name is Samantha Brady. I'm currently employed as a Class C machinist at EJ Ajax Sons out of Fridley. I was asked to come here today to speak about how the Empower Program, HIRED, Hennepin Technical College, and companies like my own have helped change my life. In order to do that, though, I need to take you back in time with me to where I was a little bit over a year ago. I'm a recovering meth addict who in 2005 was convicted of a fifth-degree possession of the drug. And that led to house arrest and probation, with a five-year state sentence over my head of a year and a day. Being the addict that I was at the time, I waited only 13 days on house arrest before I violated my probation with the dirty UA. And the judge decided in order for me to learn from that I needed to go and execute my sentence. So at age 21, having just given birth to my second daughter 6 days prior, I was placed in Pipestone County Jail. It was there that I sat for 30 days before I was transferred to the only women's correctional facility in the state of Minnesota in Shakopee. I had plenty of time to think at Pipestone about everything that had happened with a clear mind, and I was at peace with going to Shakopee. I knew that I was going to participate in as many programs as they offered to better myself for when I would leave. I knew that if I committed to a program in there, that I would do the same on the outside. For me, in order to have prison been a positive experience, I needed to do something good with my time. Every day, the prison sends out an email to all the units for the inmates to read about all the current events and things that are going on and programs that you can sign up for. Around November or December, they sent out an email about a metal forming class that they were trying to put together. They wanted all those who met the criteria and were interested in the program to apply. Since I met the requirements, I sent in my letter and was put on a list to come over to the library and test for it. All the testing went well, and the course sounded interesting. I had nothing else but time there, so I decided to go for it. By January of 2006, I had started the first metal forming class one, level one, in Shakopee. The class was really good, and it helped us inmates really work together with one another. For the next couple of months, we would meet two times a week for 4 hours at a time. There were about 12 to 15 women in my class of all different ages and races, but we all came together through that class. One of the best parts about the class, though, was the fact that it wasn't all just machines and measurements. They had a couple of classes in the computer lab to familiarize us with the computers and the different programs that we might encounter. Just basic stuff, but it really helped. There was also a class where two hired counselors came in and helped us go through the interview process. To do this, they held mock interviews with us and had us answer the hardest question, which is, yes, I am a felon. The part that made it even more real for us, though, was when she came, had us come up front and put on her blazer so we could more get into the character of being on an interview. To me, the class was a huge success. When I left Shakopee in May, I had graduated from my metal forming class, I had also tested and passed my NIMS credential, and I had also taken the time, when I was there, to make a resume and send a copy of it to my hired counselor. When I got out, she had all my information for when I got out so she'd be able to contact me, and that's what really makes this program work, is that when I left there, it didn't just end, it's where it began. My hired counselor did keep in contact with me, and that's what really made the difference for me. When I was released, I went to treatment, and my hired counselor called me there. I let her know what my plans were and where I would be next. In late June, I went to a halfway house in Fridley, Minnesota, and I was encouraged by my hired counselor to go to the local workforce center and get online to set up an email account so she could email my resume to me so that I could work on it. We emailed back and forth about some final changes, and she already had a company in mind in my area for me to send it to. I sent my resume, and they called her about getting an interview. I was so excited, and it all happened so fast. I went to the interview and met Rob Duvall, the plant manager. He took me on a plant tour, and then we did the interview. Before I went home, he told me to think about the offer, and if I was interested in the job, to call back. Well, I seriously had no idea how to answer that question. So as soon as I got home, I called my hired counselor and asked her for advice. She advised me to go and call after lunch and say, yes, I've had time to think and this is what I want to do. Well, the rest is history, as they say. I started my first day at EJA DAX on July 31st, 2006, and I've been there ever since. If you would have asked me a year ago today where I would be right now, I would have never imagined all this. I'm living on my own, all the way up here, away from my family, trying to make a better life for myself and my daughters up here. I'm paying taxes instead of using tax dollars to be locked up. I'm even taking advantage of the Empowered program, along with the help of Hennepin Technical College and my company, to further my education that I started while I was incarcerated. Currently, I'm enrolled at HTC with a skill level 2 for metal stamping. My future seems so much more brighter now that I have stable employment. By March, I will qualify for medical coverage at my job, and in May, I will receive 6 days of vacation. Those are both things that I never had at previous jobs. I even get paid holidays, and I used to work them at old employers. I am proud to say at EJA DAX that we have gone over 16 years without a lost time injury in our shop. In this field, that's quite a feat, but it is due to proper training and adhering to a high level of professionalism when it comes to safety. Safety, safety, safety. Safety is the most important part of the job. Another thing that keeps me coming back to EJA DAX is a small family-type atmosphere, as well as continued training that we do there. But what job would we complete without good pay? And a good paycheck is what I take home every week. It is also motivation to learn more, to earn more. I really couldn't tell you where I'd be today if it wasn't for the collaboration of all these programs working together so well that brought the education to me where I needed it the most. Coming out of the lifestyle that I used to be in and moving to a big city was a huge change for me. To have EJA DAX say basically, yes, you are a felon, and yes, we do know where you were, but we'd still like to give you a chance for you to prove yourself, it feels great. In the end, it's not so much about a handout, but more of a hand up to help somebody out of where they used to be. I try not to dwell on my past much anymore, because it's not the person that I am today. But I'll forever be grateful for being able to be a part of such an awesome program. Sky's the limit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Samantha. That was very good testimony, and we appreciate it. And congratulations to you, too. Mm-hmm. Ms. Samarja, maybe you could tell us what kind of a mix of dollars do you get for the hired program?
Well, hired bids on government contracts, and that's 97% of our funding. But for this particular program that Samantha took part in, for the first level of it, actually, we collaborated on a grant from the National Association of Manufacturers to fund the program. We also had some money from Hennepin County and the Precision Metal Forming Association. So really, because manufacturers in our area were crying out for trained people to come into their pipeline at the entry level, a collaborative that Samantha mentioned, Hennepin Technical College, a number of groups got together, applied for the money, and brought the money into the local area to fund it. So other than a small amount from Hennepin County, there was no government funding in it. The second round, the training that she is starting to attend now, the MPower that you see attached to her testimony, is being funded with a grant from the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership funding, and that has just begun.
Samantha, did you see in your testimony that people from hired from that group came to the prison? And
yes, they did.
So, Ms. Marja, how did that work? Was that some collaboration between the corrections and your group? Or?
That's right. We had been talking to the prison for quite a while about a variety of programs, and when this one came along, our staff began to talk with prison officials, and in fact, one is sitting right over there, Wardy, and they were happy to work with us, and were quite cordial to have training come into the facility, and so we took it there. We're under discussion with Stillwater, the facility in Stillwater now, to take the training there as well, potentially, and so that's part of what we do. Really, we try to take the training where people can't get it, where they can use their time constructively. As Samantha mentioned, people are sitting in prison or in a correctional facility, and employers are on the outside saying, you know, my older workforce is going to retire here over the next few years. We don't have people coming into these manufacturing jobs because they didn't hear about them in high school. You know, they thought manufacturing was gone away. Well, it's a whole different world in manufacturing now, and they just can't get enough people to go in. So it was a wonderful collaboration with Shakopee to help young women also not only learn something that would help them to support their families when they got out instead of going back on the MFIP program, but it was also, in many cases, non-traditional employment for them, where they could earn a much better wage than they would in the traditional jobs that they might go into coming out of prison. So it was really a win-win-win all the way around. And I should tell you, too, that the number of employers that we're working with has now grown to 37 that advise on this program and help collaborate with Hennepin Technical College in writing the curriculum. So this isn't a cookie-cutter approach, and that's why we had to go out and get money from national associations and from other sources than government to get it going, because typically your government-funded programs are fairly narrowly focused, and we can only do certain things. And as you well know from the testimony you've heard today, the government funding has been cut back so far. So we did that springboard off the private money, if you will, then to the second level of the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership.
Ms. Marja, just before I get to Representative Norton, quickly, I'm sure you didn't approach the metal fabricators or their national organization saying, give us a grant, we're going to go work with women felons, or maybe you did, but how did that part of it, and how was it received by the groups that gave you the grant?
Not a problem. It was well received that we have brought in a diverse group of people to work in the manufacturing plants because, you know, if you look around, the workforce of tomorrow is much more diverse than the workforce of yesterday. Our graduation in December that Samantha attended out at Hennepin Technical College really looked like a meeting of the UN. We had immigrants from Africa, from Southeast Asia, from China. We had young women from the Shakopee Institution. We had immigrants from South America. We had older workers. We had a couple of women who said, I was laid off from a job I had for 28 years, and I thought my life was ending. I didn't know what I would do. I had been an administrative assistant or something like that, And now they're working in a manufacturing plant, making more than they made as an administrative assistant, and they have a whole new career at the age of 52 or something like that. So the manufacturers, the National Association, have really been quite happy that actually we're reaching out to a population that they might not have actually gotten involved with. And so it's bringing all these pieces together.
Great. That's great. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina, members. It's very exciting to hear the success of your program and all these other programs we've heard about today, because it makes it more satisfying to know that our investments are paying off and encourage us to continue with that. And I know this committee will be looking at continuing and perhaps reinforcing some of these programs. And for Samantha, I guess my mother role pops in here. You're nice and young, and I'm an old mother. But I just want to congratulate you. And not only on the success that you had with this particular endeavor that you've taken, but as the role model that you are for your children, that's marvelous. And I would encourage you to consider, if you have the time, I know your life must be terribly busy with your job and your children, but to go out and speak to others and be encouraging to other young women and particularly meth addicts and their issues. I think you did your very articulate, and you did a nice job presenting to this group, and I know you could do the same and encourage some other people to take the right steps that you have. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, first I want to protest Representative Norton calling herself old, because that makes a lot of us in big trouble.
We're turned over once, Evan.
Samantha and Ms. Samarja. Can you tell me, is your program gender-based, primarily focused on women, or?
No, it's
okay. So it's a mix. And is it metro-based, or do you go statewide? Where are your jobs coming from?
Hired is based here in the Twin Cities. Our main office is in North Minneapolis, and we work in Hennepin, Ramsey, Washington, and Dakota counties. And the jobs come from the entire metro area. Our focus in this project started in Hennepin County, but now we have manufacturers also in St. Paul and throughout the metro area that are working with us.
One more question.
Are there programs similar to yours that address this in a wider range of counties rather than just the four metro counties? In other words, in the bio committee, I've had people in the industries come in and say we don't have trained workers, and they're from St. Cloud to Pipestone to the northwest part of the state, and I'm just wondering if there's another program that matches yours or is similar to yours and it's not just metro based.
Well, I Representative Mahoney, I think you'd find that most of the programs that respond to the needs of business are very customized to their area and regional. There's one in Park Rapids. The name escapes me completely. Kathy Carney runs that one. Teamworks, that's it. Thank you. Couldn't think of it. There are a few scattered around the state that concentrate on various regional needs, but I think the problem that we all face and why you do find them being very regional is that it is so very difficult to pull the funding together to focus on the local needs and to keep something going. You know, you often hear that a foundation or an organization or sometimes even on around the government funding, you're asked for a new and creative idea. And once you get that new and creative idea out there and you've got 37 employers waiting in line to get these folks, the funding's over, and, you know, where do you go from there? What's the next new and creative idea? So I think you would find for us, for Teamworks, for other organizations throughout Minnesota that do this kind of customization for business, that we could be doing a lot more. And, in fact, that's why I'm here. If we had some direct funding to do this R&D and this working with our local businesses, it's very time-consuming, as you can imagine, to sit down with a range of employers in biomedical or manufacturing or a variety of fields and work through a curriculum and work through meeting their needs, very time intensive. And the other end of it, part of what you heard Samantha talking about, all the support that goes into getting people, recruiting people into the program, supporting them through the program, again, is very time consuming too. And your mainstream programs, for example, the funding that comes from the federal government for the Workforce Investment Act programs that you've heard mentioned here today, has been cut back year by year by year by year, so that there's very little left. There's very little money in the state budget also for this kind of thing. So that's why it gets so regionalized, because it's such hard work to keeping your own regional initiative going, finding money for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Eastland approves the minutes of the January 24th meeting. I know he's read them profusely. Are there any additions or corrections to the meeting minutes? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Clark. Well, hold on. There's more questions for you. We just had to do that before we forgot.
I'm sorry.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry I missed most of this meeting. I had a medical appointment, and it took longer than I thought, but because I love what you're doing, having this hearing, and I wish I'll go back and read. I'm trying to read through all this stuff, but I did want to ask Mr. Marja a question, and congratulations to you for your wonderful success. And actually, you started talking about it, which is the state of our own state's investment in these programs. I'm just wondering, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be helpful to actually chart out what we used to invest in these programs. Let me just take your program, HIRED, and what kind of changes it's gone through over the years, and especially since like 2003 when we started making big cuts in a lot of things. So,
I might interject here that Mr. Bondo, who came from the, with the program, with the first testifier, gave us this sheet right here, if you see this sheet, which is an excellent sheet, which is exactly what you asked. He's the only one that presented it to us, and he's claiming that in 1 year he thinks that he saved the state over $6,800,000 if, you know, these kids had continued to be in trouble and everything else. So if the rest of you, and maybe Ms. Marge, if you could put together something similar to this, it would be a big help to the committee to I guess, document why we think these programs are necessary to continue. Representative Clark, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, this is an excellent document. I know Mr. Bongo, I'm sure it's not surprising. He's very successful at putting these kind of programs together. And I do think that the cost savings is a good, you know, what you're leveraging and the cost savings is very, very good to give us. But what I was saying was a little bit different. I would just like to know what the state's investment in these programs, in other words, the state appropriation or the state, you know, however we've gotten to the money to them, usually a direct appropriation, what it's been over the years, because as you mentioned, the federal government has cut back a great deal. The state government has cut back a great deal. And one of the things that kind of concerns me, and I know one of these was a youth program, last session, and Representative Gunther can back me up on this, basically the governor wiped out several youth programs, just eliminated them, and said the federal government is going to fill in, so we don't need to do it at the state level. Well, we came back and, you know, found out, of course, the federal government was not going to fill in, and in fact, many of these programs, a number of them closed down or were drastically cut back, and Representative Gunther and I another spot back, and we got some appropriations to keep some of them alive. But, you know, we aren't investing in smart programs like yours the way that I think we could be, and I mm-hmm. would just like to help us have a little historical view. So I'm thinking more about having the, and maybe this is something staff can do with the help of folks like you who can put a specific agency's face on it. Let's see what we put into these programs over the years. Put that alongside this, which is, as you say, very helpful to know what the return on the dollar is. But, I mean, it would be helpful. I'm very concerned about the current budget in terms of the youth programs again.
Representative Clark,
cuts and
mentioned before you got here that the several, I think three or four of the testifiers have left that youth program is scheduled to sunset, and in fact there's a little bit of money I think in the governor's budget, but not specifically for this program. It's a very good suggestion, and Mr. Berg will have those numbers for us, and with the help of people like Ms. Marja can tell how much they used to get versus what they get today. And Mr. Bondo and others. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much.
Samantha, that was wonderful testimony. You have to be a shining star of that darkness, I think. Meth is a pretty serious problem,
mm-hmm.
and you have this in control now.
Yes.
Are you receiving support of some type of groups?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes, I go to NAA, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a good program.
Continue, yes.
Yeah, stay with it. Thank
sure.
you.
Well, listen, we thank all of the testifiers today. It's been wonderful testimony. Thank you and congratulations to you. And members, we have the different MNSCU faculty members coming in, both the two-year and four-year institutions on Tuesday. Representative Moe.
Just really quick, I apologize for missing the presentation from the Northwest Indian OIC. I know they did a great job. Mike Fongo and Demita run a top-notch program up there. I give my full support. My wife has been very involved supporting their projects too. They do a lot of good work educating nurses, other professionals that would otherwise not be employed without their leadership. So I just wanted to, for the record, give them my support.
Thank you, Representative Moe. And with that, members, meeting adjourned.